smiled, and she smiled back, beloved. Her father went back to his work, and the jumbled creature in the far, dark corner twitched. Charlie startled, knocking her blocks to the ground, but her father did not seem to hear. She began to rebuild the tower, but the creature kept drawing her gaze. The twisted metal skeleton with its burning, silver eyes. It twitched again, and she wanted to ask, but could not make herself speak the words. "Does it hurt?" Charlie whispered, the image so clear that she could almost smell the hot, metallic scent of the workshop. Elizabeth froze. Then all at once the illusion vanished, and the metal plates of her clown-painted face stripped back, bearing the coils and wires and jagged teeth. Charlie shrank back, and Elizabeth moved with her, maintaining the distance between them. "Yes," she whispered, and her eyes blazed silver. "Yes, it hurt." The plates of her face folded back in, but her eyes still glowed. Charlie blinked and looked away. The light blinded her, poking pinpoint holes in her vision. Elizabeth stared bitterly. "So, you remember me then?" "Yes." Charlie rubbed her eyes as her vision began to clear. "In the corner. I didn't want to look. I thought you were someone else," she said, her voice sounding thin and childish to her own ears. Elizabeth laughed. "Did any of those other things really look like me? I'm unique. Look at me." "It hurts my eyes," Charlie said faintly, and Elizabeth grabbed her by the chin and pulled her close. Charlie shied away, closing her eyes against the light, and Elizabeth slapped her cheek with painful force. "Look at me." Charlie took a shaky breath and obeyed. Elizabeth's face looked like Charlie's again, but the silver light poured out coldly from the place where her eyes should be. Charlie let it flood her vision, blotting out everything else. "Do you know why my eyes were always glowing?" Elizabeth asked softly. "Do you know why I twitched and shuddered in the dark?" Charlie shook her head slightly, and Elizabeth let go of her chin. "It was because your father left me turned on all the time. Every moment, every day, I was aware and unfinished. Watching him as the hours passed, and he created toys for the little Charlie, unicorns and bunnies that moved and talked, as I hung in the dark, waiting, abandoned." The glare from her eyes faded a little, and Charlie blinked, trying not to show her relief. "Why am I even talking to you about this? You weren't even there yet." Elizabeth turned her face, almost in disgust. "I was," Charlie answered. "I was there. I remember." "You remember?" Elizabeth mocked. "Are you sure you were there for all of those memories?" Charlie searched her thoughts for anything that could confirm the memories she clung to. "Look down," Elizabeth whispered. "What?" Charlie whimpered. "Your memory. I'm sure it's crystal clear, since you were there and all." Elizabeth smiled. "Look down." Charlie returned to her memory, standing in front of her father's workbench. She was immobile. She didn't have a voice. "Look down," Elizabeth whispered again. Charlie looked to her feet, but didn't see feet at all, only three legs of a camera tripod anchored to the ground. "He was making memories for you, making a life for his little rag doll, making her a real girl. I'm sure many of those memories have been elaborated upon, edited, and embellished, but make no mistake, Charlie wasn't there." Elizabeth leaned closer to Charlie. He made us 1, 2, 3. Elizabeth touched Charlie's shoulder lightly, then brought her hand back to her own chest. 4. Her eyes flickered, and the silver glow faded until her eyes looked nearly human. Charlie would be a baby, then a little girl, and then a sulky teenager. She looked Charlie up and down with a pointed sneer. Then her expression cleared as she continued. Then at last she would be a woman. She would be finished. Perfect. Me. Elizabeth's face tightened. But something changed as Henry labored, racked with grief, over his little girl. The littlest Charlotte was made with a broken heart. She cried all the time, day and night. The second Charlotte he made when he was at the depth of madness, almost believing the lies he told himself. She was as hopelessly desperate for her father's love as he was for hers. The third Charlotte he made when he began to realize he'd gone mad, when he questioned every thought he had, and begged his sister Jen to remind him what was real. The third Charlotte was strange. Elizabeth gave Charlie a contemptuous look, but Charlie scarcely saw it. The third Charlotte was strange, she repeated silently. She ducked her head and rubbed the flannel of her father's shirt with her thumb, then looked back up. Elizabeth's face was stiff with rage. She was nearly trembling. What about the fourth? Charlie asked hesitantly. There was no fourth, she snapped. When Henry began to make the fourth, his despair turned to rage. He seethed as he soldered her skeleton together, pouring his anger into the forge where he shaped her very bones. I was not Charlotte drenched in grief. I was made alive with Henry's fury. Her eyes flared again with silver light, and Charlie stayed herself, forcing herself not to blink. Elizabeth leaned in closer, her face inches from Charlie's. Do you know the first words your father ever spoke to me? She hissed. Charlie shook her head minutely. He said to me, "You are wrong." He tried to fix the flaw he saw in me, at first. But what was wrong, as Henry saw it, was the very thing that made me alive. Rage, Charlie said softly. Rage. Elizabeth drew herself up and shook her head. My father abandoned me. Her face twitched. Henry abandoned me, she corrected herself. Of course, I could not comprehend those memories until I had received a soul of my own. Once I took it for myself, she smiled. Once I had endowed myself with a soul, I experienced those memories anew, not as an uncomprehending toy, twitching and seizing with an all-consuming rage I could not fathom, but as a person, as a daughter. It's rather a cruel irony that I would escape the life of one neglected daughter, only to embody another. Charlie was silent, and for a moment her father's face returned to her, his smile that was always so sad. Elizabeth laughed abruptly, shaking her out of her memories. You're not Charlie either, you know. You're not even the soul of Charlie, Elizabeth mocked. You aren't even a person. You're a ghost of a man's regret. You're what's left of a man who lost everything. You're the sad little tears that fell unceremoniously into a doll that used to belong to Charlie. Elizabeth suddenly glared at her as if looking through her. And if I had to take a guess, she grabbed Charlie under her chin and pulled her upright, studying her torso for a moment. She made a quick motion with her other hand, and Charlie gasped. The room was spinning again. Elizabeth's hand had disappeared, but but it soon re-emerged, and she was holding something. "Look before you lose consciousness," Elizabeth whispered. There, before Charlie's eyes, was a rag doll, and recognition flared. "Ella," she tried to whisper, "this is you." The room went dark. "What was that?" Carlton lifted his head, holding his breath as he waited to hear it again. After a moment, he did. Someone was whimpering, and the sound was coming from nearby. Carlton took in a renewed gulp of air, instantly filled with new purpose. After hours of flickering bulbs and distant echoes, this was right beside him. Carlton leaped to his feet. Across the hall, a door was ajar, with an orange light glowing unsteadily from inside. How did I not notice that? Carlton made his way across the hall, sliding his feet along the floor so as not to make a sound. When he reached the door, he peered in cautiously through the crack. The orange light was from an open furnace set into the wall, its mouth large enough to fit a small car. The furnace was the only light in the dark room, but he could make out a long table with something dark lying on it. The whimpering came again, and this time Carlton's eyes lit on its source. A small, blonde-haired boy was huddled in the darkest corner of the room, opposite the furnace. Carlton ran into the room and knelt beside the boy, who looked up at him numbly. He was bleeding from shallow cuts on his arm and one corner of his mouth, but Carlton saw no other visible injuries. "Hey," he whispered nervously, "are you okay?" The boy didn't respond, and Carlton took hold of his arms, readying to pick him up. When he touched the child, he could feel the tremors throughout his body. "He's terrified." "Come on, we're getting out of here," Carlton said. The little boy pointed to the creature on the table.
"Save him, too," the boy whispered tearfully. "He hurts so bad."
He squeezed his eyes shut. Carlton glanced at the large, motionless figure on the table by the furnace. He hadn't considered that it might be a person. He scanned the room to make sure nothing else was moving, then patted the boy on the shoulder and got to his feet. He approached the table cautiously, keeping to the wall instead of walking across the center of the room. As he got closer, the burning smell of metal and oil rushed up against him, and he covered his face with his sleeve, trying not to gag as he examined the prone figure. "It's not a person." On the table, illuminated by the flickering orange light, was a mass of metal. A melted, clumpy skeleton of metal bulges and blobs, barely resembling anything at all. Carlton studied the thing for a long moment, then looked back at the little boy, uncertain what to say.
"Hate," a voice snarled, and Carlton spun around to face a twisted man, creeping out from the shadows. "Hate is the key to all of this," the man went on as he haltingly approached the table. "If you keep all this at just the right temperature, it's malleable, it's moldable, and it's highly, highly effective. Or maybe contagious is the word. I suspect you could put it in anything, but it's best to put it into something that you can control, at least to a certain extent."
William Afton lurched into the light, and Carlton stepped back reflexively, though the table was between them.
"It's an interesting alchemy," William continued. "You can make something that you control completely, but that has no will of its own. Like a gun, I suppose."
He ran his withered hand over the silver arm of the creature.
"Or you can take a drop of pixie dust," he smiled, "and you can create a monster that you... mostly control, one with unlimited potential.
Carlton!
He stepped back with a shout of surprise. The voice was so clear in his head that he recognized it instantly.
Michael?
The single word was enough. Carlton turned to the table with a new, terrible clarity. He knew exactly what he was looking at. The endoskeletons of the original Freddy's animatronics, welded and melted together, immobile and featureless, and still inhabited by the spirits of the children who had been murdered inside of them so many years ago. Still filled with life and motion and thought, all trapped, all in terrible pain. Carlton forced himself to look William Afton in the eye.
"How could you do this to them?" he asked, nearly trembling with rage.
"They do everything willingly," William said plainly. "The process only truly works if they freely release a portion of themselves."
The flames rose without warning, and heat radiated in painful waves from the gaping furnace. Carlton shielded his eyes, and the creature on the table convulsed. William smiled.
"Scared of fire, but they still trust me. They don't see me as I am now. They only remember me as I was, you see."
Carlton broke his eyes away, feeling like he was waking from hypnosis. He darted his eyes desperately around the room, looking for something, anything to attack with. The chamber was strewn with scrap metal and parts, and Carlton grabbed a metal pipe that lay by his feet and hefted it like a baseball bat. Afton was gazing down at the creature on the table, apparently insensible to anything else around him, and Carlton hesitated, considering the man for a moment. "He looks like he could fall apart all on his own," he thought, taking in Afton's fragile, hunched body and the thin skin of his head, seeming to scarcely cover the skull beneath. Then he looked back to the creature on the table.
"I think I've got the moral high ground here," he decided grimly, and raised the pipe over his head as he stalked around the table toward Afton.
Suddenly, his arms were jerked above his head, the pipe dropping from his hands and hitting the ground with a bang. Carlton struggled with the cables that gripped his wrists, but he could not wrestle free. Slowly, he was lifted off his feet, his arms stretched painfully out to his sides by two cables that extended from opposite sides of the room, seeming to attach to nothing.
"I've never tried this on a human being before," William muttered, pressing some kind of mechanical syringe into the chest of the molten creature on the table.
He wrenched the tool sideways, extracting something with great difficulty. The syringe was opaque, and Carlton could not see what filled it, but his heart raced as he began to suspect he knew where this was going. He tugged harder at the cables that bound him, but each time he pulled, he only wrenched his shoulders from side to side. Afton pulled the syringe out of the creature and gave a satisfied nod, then turned to Carlton.
"Usually this goes into something mechanical, something I made. I've never attempted it on something sentient."
William gave Carlton a measured stare.
"This will be an interesting experiment."
William lifted the mechanical syringe, carefully placing it over Carlton's heart. Carlton gasped, but before he could try to move, William plunged the long needle into his chest. Carlton screamed, then realized distantly it was really the blonde boy in the corner screaming. Carlton wheezed and gasped, but could make no sound as his chest burned with a blinding agony. Blood soaked his shirt, and it clung to his skin as he convulsed in his bonds.
"For your sake, You'd better hope my little experiment does something, because I doubt you will survive otherwise,"
William said mildly. He nodded toward the cables and Carlton dropped to the ground. The pain in his chest was unthinkable. He felt like he'd been hit full on with a shotgun. Blood sputtered from his mouth, dripping onto the floor, and Carlton curled around himself, squeezing his eyes shut as the pain intensified.
"Please make it stop," he thought. Then, "Please don't let me die." "Maybe the heart was too direct," William lamented. "Well, that's the point of this, to learn, trial and error."
He turned his gaze toward the blonde-haired child, who still huddled, weeping in the corner. Chapter 15. Steps echoed endlessly in the dark, pacing back and forth across the enclosed space.
"Are you still listening to me?" a voice rang out.
Charlie was lost in the dark, spinning silently and trying to get to the surface of whatever void she was in.
"Unlike you," the other Charlie uttered, unseen. "I was real. I was an actual little girl, one who deserved the kind of attention showered over you. You were nothing."
Charlie opened her eyes, the room still spinning. She tried to breathe, but all her breath stopped short of going in or out. There was a doll laying on the floor a few feet in front of her. She reached for it convulsively, like gasping for air.
"Do you want to know where my hate comes from? It's not from this machine that I reside in, and it's not from my past life, if that's what you want to call it."
Charlie clawed at the floor with her fingers, unable to move the rest of her body. She gripped the doll with her fingertips and pulled it closer.
"I hate because even now, I'm still not enough," Elizabeth whispered.
She held out her sleek, metallic fingers in front of her face.
"Even after this, embodying the one thing Father did love, I'm not enough. Because he can't duplicate this. He can't make himself like me."
Her voice began to grow angry again.
"He can't duplicate what happened to me, or maybe he's too scared to try it on himself. I broke free of my prison. I emerged from the flames and the wreckage of Henry's last great failure, and I went to my father. I gave myself to him, to study, to use, to learn the secrets of my creation. And still it is you he wants."
Charlie clambered up onto her hands and knees and dragged herself toward the hallway. Elizabeth didn't seem concerned, taking slow steps behind her, not trying to catch her, only to keep her in sight.
"You, maybe he can recreate. Henry somehow got a piece of himself into you, and that's something we haven't seen before. That's unique."
Charlie kept crawling steadily. She was beginning to feel stronger, but she kept her movements slow and clumsy, getting as much distance as she could between herself and Elizabeth. Charlie looked up and down the hall, searching for something, anything, that might give her an advantage. The door to the next room was open, and she could see a desk. Sitting on it was a round stone paperweight. Without picking up her pace, Charlie crawled across the room, dragging her legs as if they pained her, while Elizabeth's slow, patient steps followed a pace behind.
"Can you get the green for me?" a voice called.
Carlton blinked. He was sitting upright but felt only half present, as if he had been daydreaming.
"The green," the tiny voice repeated. "Please?"
Carlton cast his eyes around for something green. The floor was black and white, and they were sitting somewhere a little dark. A little boy was hunched over a piece of paper, drawing. Carlton looked up. We're under a table. Under the table at Freddy's. There were drawings scattered in front of him on the floor, and a box of crayons spilled out across the tiles. Carlton spotted a green crayon that had rolled up against the wall, and he grabbed it and handed it to the little boy, who took it without looking up.
Michael, Carlton said, recognition dawning.
Michael continued to draw.
Where?
Carlton looked around, but what he saw didn't make sense to him. The pizzeria was brightly lit, yet Carlton couldn't see more than 5 feet away, as though there was a blurry cloud masking everything beyond. He ducked his head out cautiously from under the table, but the bright lights hurt his eyes, and he shielded them with his hand, crawling back under. Michael had not moved. He was drawing steadily, his brow furrowed in concentration. Carlton studied the pictures on the ground with a vague sense that something was wrong.
I don't belong here, he thought, yet part of him felt completely at home.
What are you doing? He whispered to Michael, who looked up from his drawing at last.
I have to put them back together, Michael explained. See?
He pointed out from the table at the pizzeria around them. Carlton squinted into the blurry horizon, seeing nothing at first. Then they began to appear. He saw pages and pages of colorful drawings, some on the walls, others blowing through the air.
They're all in pieces, Michael said.
He shuffled the pages in front of him and found two that showed the same child. Then he placed one on top of the other and began to trace the lines.
These go together,
Michael said, holding up the picture. The two drawings had become one, the separate pages somehow bonded together. The lines were clearer and the colors more vibrant.
What are you putting back together? Carlton asked. My friends.
Michael pointed to a single picture propped up against the wall. It showed five children, three boys and two girls, standing together in a cheerful pose, with a yellow rabbit standing behind them.
I know this picture, Carlton said slowly.
His mind was still foggy, and as he tried to grasp at the answer, it only slipped further away.
Who is that?
Carlton whispered, pointing to the rabbit.
He's our friend.
Michael smiled, not looking up from his work.
Can you go get more for me?
Carlton looked out into the pizzeria. The space he could see had expanded a little more, and now he could make out the blurs of other children who seemed to be grasping at pages as they flew by, trying to grab the drawings. Carlton got out from under the table and stood up, walking through the midst of the mirage in colors. A boy in a black and white striped shirt came running up, chasing a piece of paper.
What are you doing?
Carlton asked as the boy grabbed empty air and the page flew away into the blurry distance.
My papers blew away,
the boy cried and hurried off. Carlton turned and saw another boy in the same outfit on the opposite side of the room, chasing other pages. A little girl with long blonde hair ran past him, and he whirled around, recognizing her far away. There were duplicates of each child, all of them chasing different pages. A single figure stood still amongst the chaos, out of phase with the surroundings. At first it seemed to be a man bent over a table, but as Carlton's head throbbed with waves of confusion, the man became a yellow rabbit, not standing over a table, but over five children, tied together as one. The second image washed away, and the rabbit became a man again, standing in the dark. The children ran past the man as if they could not see him. As Carlton watched, several children ran straight through him without seeming to notice. Carlton approached the man, and as he got closer, the yellow rabbit appeared again, turning to look at him momentarily before blowing away like smoke, leaving the man underneath.
This isn't real, Carlton gasped,
trying to parse the two overlapping realities that seemed to be swirling around him. Three figures seemed to hold fast, while the rest of his surroundings flickered in and out of existence. The man standing at the table, a blonde boy in the corner, the only child not running and not repeated, and a body lying on the floor, curled in a puddle of blood. Is that me? Am I dead?
No, silly, a child called. You're with us.
The syringe mechanism recoiled with a loud snap. The man in shadow had taken something from the metal body on the table. Suddenly, another drawing flew into the air, and another ghostly child appeared to chase it. The little girl with blonde locks of hair and a red ribbon bouncing on her shoulders ran past as well.
Stop! Carlton called, and she obeyed, her eyes still locked on the drawings she had been pursuing. Who is that? Carlton directed her attention to the yellow rabbit flickering in and out of existence.
That's our friend. He helped me find my puppy, she exclaimed before running off again.
They don't know, Carlton whispered, releasing her as she disappeared into the blur surrounding him.
Carlton searched the air as drawings blew by, snatching at the ones with images that seemed familiar.
What are you doing?
The little boy in the striped shirt asked.
I'm going to help you put these together, Carlton said, reaching for another picture as it blew past.
When she had finally crawled her way to the desk, Charlie reached up and grabbed for the top of it, then pulled herself up, feigning a struggle. She winced as she put weight on her feet, continuing to act weaker than she actually was. In reality, she was nearly back to her full strength. She leaned heavily on the desk as if for support, putting one hand directly on the heavy stone paperweight.
We both know he won't be able to recreate you either.
Elizabeth was near. And the real question would be, would we really want him to? Besides, Elizabeth approached Charlie from behind, moving faster.
I think I hate you more than I love him.
She raised her hand in attack, and Charlie spun around, swinging the rock in a single motion. There was a thunderous crack as it slammed into Elizabeth's face, and Charlie fell back with the shock, dropping the paperweight. She hit the ground hard, cradling her hand. Elizabeth staggered backward, holding her hand over her face, but she could not conceal the damage without her illusion. One entire side of her gleaming white jaw had been knocked off her face, revealing the wires beneath. She cocked her head to the side for a moment, as if running a system check. Charlie didn't wait for the result. She leaped to her feet, pushing past Elizabeth as she ran back the way she'd come. Charlie heard Elizabeth moving and dove for the hall closet, pulling it shut tight behind her.
I know it may sound very childish of me, Elizabeth cried. Her voice sounded like she was still at the end of the hall. But if he doesn't want me, then he won't get you either.
The footsteps drew closer, and Charlie looked one way and another, hoping desperately for a place to hide in the small closet. Then suddenly, as she turned completely around, she saw a familiar thing. You. The faceless robot wielding its knife, the mannequin, the construct that her father had built for one purpose, to end his life.
Your dad thought you were so special. Your memory was just too precious to let go of.
The blank face was almost peaceful in the dark. It had been built for one thing. It had completed its duty and had remained in silence ever since, standing as a memorial to pain and to loss. The closet door moved slightly as Elizabeth gripped the knob. Charlie could see her shadow under the door. She grabbed at the clothing hanging behind her, old coats and dresses, and pulled them forward, concealing the construct as best she could.
You can't overpower me, Elizabeth whispered.
You aren't like me, she added with relish. Charlie waited in front of the blank-faced creature, not hiding. Gently, Elizabeth pulled the door open.
I shouldn't be here, Charlie whispered to Elizabeth.
Charlie heard John cough from the room behind them, and relief rushed through her.
He's going to be okay. He's alive.
Elizabeth glanced back as though considering him, then trained her eyes on Charlie and took two deliberate steps forward.
Charlie, John called from outside.
It's okay, John,
Elizabeth answered, her voice indistinguishable from Charlie's.
I'll be right out.
Instantaneously, she looked like Charlie again, not the grown-up Charlie she had been masquerading as, but Charlie as she was really, a mirror reflection. She shifted awkwardly, her eyes darting back toward John for just a moment, then gave Charlie a cruel smile.
How far do you think I could get with him before he noticed? She whispered.
You're right, Elizabeth, Charlie said. Elizabeth's smile faded.
I was never supposed to be here.
No?
Elizabeth took the last step, closing the distance between them. She gripped Charlie by the neck, pressing up against her.
Neither of us were.
Charlie gripped the rag doll close to her chest. Elizabeth frowned in confusion, then peered over Charlie's shoulder, seeing the robot standing directly behind her. Charlie flinched her other hand, which was behind her back, doing something unseen with a quick motion. A metal pulley screamed. Charlie closed her eyes, hugging the doll, and when the knife went through them, it did not hurt. Elizabeth gasped as the blade plunged through her, too, sounding almost human. Charlie saw Elizabeth's face, rigid with shock. Then it was gone, replaced by the smooth metal plates of her robotic form. Sparks burst in the air above her as Charlie's vision began to fade, and the smell of hot plastic came to her from very far away.
It's not fair,
Elizabeth's voice sputtered with static.
I never had a life.
Charlie struggled to take in a breath, still clutching the ragdoll to her chest. She reached for Elizabeth's dangling hand clumsily and caught it. Elizabeth looked at her confusedly, and Charlie strained to pull her hand up to the ragdoll. Fumbling, she closed Elizabeth's fingers around the doll, then, still holding her hand, Charlie pushed with the last of her strength, sliding the doll across the 4-inch stretch of blade between them until it rested against Elizabeth's chest. Charlie tried to smile, but everything was dark. She had forgotten how to see. Charlie felt her head fall forward and could not pull it up again. Elizabeth twitched for a moment longer, rattling the blade that pierced them both. Then her head slumped forward too, resting against Charlie's forehead.
Charlie!
John was screaming her name.
Charlie!
I love you too. The words didn't come, and then there was nothing at all.
Here, right here, Carlton called.
The little boy in the striped shirt helped align two more pictures, and Michael traced over them, connecting them into a single drawing. A second boy in a striped shirt appeared from the blurry surroundings and sat down on top of the one already sitting with them, merging into him seamlessly. Only Carlton seemed to notice the merging of the two children. Not even the boy in the striped shirt himself seemed aware. Beside them was the little girl with blonde curls. They had found all her drawings and put them together, and now she looked solid and real, no longer ghostly like the others. She was able to speak in full sentences, her cognitive abilities having steadily grown stronger as her drawings were united. Carlton struggled to find matching images for the others. He was keeping track of the three stable figures, the man, the boy in the corner, and the body,
and it was clear he was running out of time. The man was making preparations to harm the boy in the corner.
"You said he saved your dog?" Carlton asked the blonde girl, grasping for answers.
"Mommy said that he went to heaven, but I heard Daddy say he was hit by a car. But I knew it wasn't true. Bonnie told me it wasn't true. He said that he had found my puppy."
She brushed a lock of hair from her shoulder with her hand.
"And did he take you to your puppy?"
"He took me, but I don't remember."
"But it was him who helped you?"
Carlton pointed to the yellow bunny in the drawing that showed all five kids.
"Yes, that's him," she smiled. "My name is Susie," she added. "And that's Cassidy."
A girl with long black hair approached, carrying more pictures in her arms.
"And you?"
Carlton looked briefly at a little boy with freckles.
"I..."
He struggled to speak, and Carlton glanced nervously at the man in the room as he matched two more drawings together.
"There!"
Michael exclaimed proudly. Another ghostly image of the freckled boy climbed under the table and merged with the one who was already there. He instantly became less ghostly and more whole.
"I'm Fritz."
He smiled, suddenly filled with more life. William Afton clenched his fists, studying his own hands for a moment, then looking toward the medical monitors in the corner.
"I feel that my time is running short."
He looked toward Carlton thoughtfully, but Carlton was still lying on the floor, motionless.
"That's unfortunate," he growled. "I hoped to learn something. But maybe that's not the problem."
He looked toward the metal table.
"Maybe we just need some new life in this mass of metal."
He smiled at the little blonde boy, who recoiled and tried to scoot away, though he was already as close to the wall as he could get.
"You'll have to forgive me, though, as I'm not sure how to do that either."
William took steps toward him.
"I can think of a few things to try. At the very least, it will be fun. Like old times."
His lips peeled back, revealing two full rows of stained yellow teeth. The door creaked as it opened, and William's eyes darted toward it as a tangled metal mess lurched toward him, scraping across the floor.
"What are you doing back here?"
William asked. The white-painted fox head was turned at an alarming angle, clearly not functioning properly. Its limbs were all turned and pivoted, some of them broken and dragging, all inching the remains of the creature into the room. The fox head's eyes spun wildly, searching the ceiling. William pointed to a corner.
"You're no use to me anymore. Get out of the way,"
he said dismissively, then drew back, surprised. Following the fox was another motorcade of broken parts, their wires reaching for one another like vines, pulling each other along and holding themselves together. Mounted on the back of the entanglement was the white and purple face of a bear.
"I'm here!"
A voice came from a speaker somewhere within the mess, cracking and popping with static. William made a face, unnerved by the wrecked, co-mingled creatures.
"Get back," he uttered, giving the Freddy face a kick.
The massive parts slid away without resistance, sounding almost disappointed as they came to a stop a few feet away.
"What a waste," he hissed.
He turned his attention to the fox again, apparently the most intact.
"Bring that boy to me," he instructed, and the fox turned its eye to the corner.
"I have to go do something for him," Susie said cheerfully, getting to her feet.
"Something for who?"
Carlton asked with alarm and took hold of her arm.
"Bonnie."
She smiled, gesturing toward the cheerful yellow rabbit wavering in and out of existence beside the table.
He asked me to do something for him just now. He wants to bring a new friend for us, and he needs my help.
Bonnie isn't your friend, Carlton said, still holding her arm. He gasped at the imminent danger that the little blonde boy faced as the girl struggled to break away.
He is my friend! He found my puppy!
She cried and yanked her arm free. No, don't go to him, Carlton pleaded. John. Get back! John screamed and jolted awake, swinging his arms up to block an attack and jerking back. His head cracked against the cabinet behind him. Ow! He groaned, regaining awareness of where he was. He rolled over, holding his side gingerly, then held perfectly still, tilting his head to listen. Silence reverberated through the space, weighing down the room with emptiness. Charlie, he whispered, everything that had happened rushing back all at once. The hallway. John pulled himself to his feet with a sick dread, bracing himself against the cabinet door. His right foot gave way as soon as he put weight on it, pain shooting up through his ankle, and he put a hand against the wall for balance, then hopped on his left foot to reach the door. He crashed hard against the doorframe, wincing as his ribs flared with pain, then squinted, trying to see in the dark. Charlie, he called. The closet door was open, and he could see figures inside, but he couldn't make out anything distinct. He made his way to the closet, leaning on the wall and trying to ignore his throbbing ankle. It was difficult to see through the hanging coats, and he began to shove them aside, then stopped abruptly, scarcely avoiding the blade of a massive knife, almost a sword, pointed directly at him. He blinked as his eyes adjusted. The blade was connected to an extended metal arm. The figure he had first thought was holding the knife had instead been run through with it, and behind that was something else. Something familiar. He backed away, bending to look at the inhuman face of the creature impaled on the knife. He stared for a moment, his face growing hot. Then suddenly he turned away and doubled over, overcome with a wave of nausea. He dropped to his knees and retched, his ribs screaming protest as he heaved, but there was nothing in his stomach to throw up. He gasped, trying to make it stop, but his stomach clenched and spasmed until he felt like he would be turned inside out. When at last it began to abate, John rested his forehead against the wall, his eyes watering. Lightheaded, he got to his feet, feeling as if years had passed. He did not look into the closet again. John limped toward the door, grinding his teeth with every step, but he did not stop moving until he was outside the house, and he did not look back.
There!
Michael cheered, momentarily distracting Susie from trying to leave. The last phantom of the girl with long black hair came and sat with them. When she had merged with the others like her, she blinked, then looked up and took in a long, calm breath.
We're all together now,
Michael said with a smile. The drawings on the ground had disappeared, and five real-seeming children sat with Carlton under the table, no longer ghostly images.
The rabbit isn't your friend, Carlton repeated.
Susie gave him a puzzled look and pointed to the only drawing left, the large one that showed all five children with the smiling yellow rabbit.
I said bring him to the table, William said angrily, drawing Carlton's attention across the shadows.
The painted fox cocked its head to the side, but before William could scold it again, more noises came from the hall. The door opened, pushed like something was bumping against it, and a variety of mechanical things made their way into the room, crawling and clawing their way across the floor in various states of disrepair. There were the climbing babies, and the gangly clown that had sat atop a carnival game in the dining room. Others filed in that Carlton did not recognize. Waddling dolls painted with clowns' faces, disjointed circus animals, and other things he could not even name.
"Get back!" William hissed at the macabre processional and brushed a crawler aside with his foot, struggling to keep his balance.
The little blonde boy had stopped crying. He was staring stunned at the creatures, shrinking away with his hand half blocking his face.
"Afraid of them now?" William turned on the boy. "Don't fear them. Fear me," he snarled with renewed strength, and he clenched his jaw, taking stiff but deliberate steps toward the boy.
"I'm the only thing in this room that you should be afraid of," he said, and the boy turned to him again, his face still full of fear. "I'm just as dangerous as I've always been," William growled.
He grabbed the boy by the arm and dragged him to the table.
"No, no, no!"
Carlton shouted as he watched the shadowy figure hoist the boy onto the table. He glanced helplessly at the children, but they looked at him blankly.
"Can't you see? He's hurting that boy!"
The children just shook their heads confusedly.
"He's in danger. I have to help him. Let me out."
Carlton struggled to get up, but his legs were weighted down and anchored to the illusion.
"That's just Bonnie,"
Susie smiled.
"Bonnie is not your friend. He's the one that hurt you. Don't you remember?"
Carlton cried with mounting frustration. He grabbed the final drawing from the wall, the one with the five children standing with the yellow rabbit, and laid it flat on the floor, then took up a red crayon. He bent over the drawing and began to make thick marks on it, pressing the crayon deep into the paper. The children strained closer to see what he was drawing.
"Here we go,"
William Afton said from the shadows. Carlton glanced up to see the little boy squirming on top of the massive metal where William was holding him in place. The table was heating up, the orange glow beginning to flare from within it.
"I'm running out of ideas," William said, failing to hide his anxiety. "But if I'm not going to survive this, then you certainly aren't either."
William pressed down on the boy's chest, and the boy struggled to free himself.
"Ouch!"
the boy cried as his elbow touched the table below, where the orange glow was spreading. He jerked his arm up and cradled it, sobbing, then shrieked as his foot pressed onto the table and began to hiss. He yanked it back, howling.
"We will see where this takes us," William said.
"Look!"
Carlton yelled, tapping the drawing hard with his crayon. The children huddled close. The yellow rabbit's eyes were now dark red, and blood dripped from its mouth. The children looked confusedly at Carlton, but there was a spark of recognition in their faces.
"I'm sorry," Carlton said desperately. "This is the bad man. This is the bad man."
Carlton pointed from the drawing to William Afton and back again.
"He is the bad man who hurt you, and right now he's about to hurt someone else," Carlton pleaded.
A hand gripped William's pant leg, and he shook it off.
"Get away from me," he growled,
but the hand persisted. The tangle of parts connected to the purple Freddy head was gathering around William's ankles, pieces plucking at him.
"I said get off me,"
he said again. His legs shook beneath him, and he let go of the boy, teetering as he struggled to regain his balance. He grasped for something steady, and his hands instinctively found the table. He recoiled, gasping in pain, and fell backward onto the floor, watching helplessly as the little blonde boy rolled off the table and ran to the back wall. Afton struggled to right himself as the wires and mechanisms scattered about the room all marched toward him to collect into a central mass, crawling up onto his body and threatening to engulf him. He pulled the pieces off and threw them aside to break apart on the concrete floor of the basement, then got unsteadily to his feet. William set his eyes on the boy once more. Nothing else mattered. He took three laborious steps forward, machines still wrapped around his legs. The head of the white fox snapped at him from his ankle, where it had wound its limbs around his leg, and the purple bear had sunk its jaw into his calf and was biting down. One of the crawling babies had climbed up onto William's back, where it thrashed its weight back and forth, setting his frail body swaying. Another crawler held fast to his ankle, chewing at his flesh. Blood dripped onto the floor with each step he took, but William's eyes remained fixed on the terrified boy, his fury only growing. Finally, in a burst of anger, he flung the robotic baby from his back and stomped down on the metal bear's head, breaking its jaw and dislodging its teeth from his leg. At last, William reached the child. The blonde boy screamed as William brushed his bony fingers over the boy's face. Then suddenly William felt something blazing hot wrap around his waist and yank him back. He twisted wildly and saw. The creature from the table was standing, and its two melted metal arms were now gripping William from behind, pulling him away from the boy. Its skin contorted and moved like molten metal, its motions jerky and unnatural. Its joints popped and snapped as it moved, as though each movement should have been impossible.
"No!" William cried, hearing the crackle of flame as his hospital gown caught fire, pressed against the burning creature. Carlton opened his eyes and took a breath, a real one. He clutched his chest and tried to remain motionless, lifting only his eyes to watch as the amalgamation of metal and cords pulled William Afton backward into the massive furnace. Smoke and fire erupted from the thing with a roar, and then the room was still. The creatures and parts that had been wriggling on the floor stopped at once and did not move again. Carlton felt the searing pain in his chest surge, and he slipped into darkness.
"Carlton!"
Carlton opened his eyes. Michael was sitting patiently beside him, apparently waiting for him to wake up.
"Is he okay now?"
Michael gave Carlton an anxious smile. Carlton looked up to see four small figures disappearing into a flood of light. Only Michael remained under the table.
"Is he okay?"
Michael repeated, waiting for confirmation.
"Yeah," Carlton whispered. "He's okay. Go be with your friends."
He smiled, but Michael didn't get up. He was looking at Carlton's chest, where someone had placed a drawing over his wound.
"This is a part of you," Carlton said, grasping at the picture.
"You'll die without it," Michael whispered.
"I can't keep this."
Carlton shook his head as Michael pushed it back.
"You can give it to me next time you see me."
Michael smiled, and the drawing began to fade, hovering where Michael had placed it for a last moment before the ghostly image vanished, seeming to sink into Carlton's chest.
"Thank you."
Carlton heard the echo of Michael's voice, but Michael was gone, and there was nothing but the light.
"Carlton!"
"John."
"Carlton, hang on! We're going to get you out of here!"
"Marla."
"Jessica."
"Carlton!"
Chapter 16.
"So, what happened then?"
Marla had scooted so close to Carlton's hospital bed that she was practically in the bed with him.
Ouch, Marla! The nurse said I need to sleep, and I shouldn't be exposed to a lot of stress right now.